halt, as no other word containing that sound and capable of making sense with the context existed in any language spoken on Earth. That less expert mortals should require full indications was beyond Sweet's patience. Therefore, though the whole point of his current shorthand is that it can express every sound in the language perfectly, vowels as well as consonants, and that your hand has to make no stroke except the easy and current ones with which you would write M, N, and U, L, P, and Q, scribbling them at whatever angle comes easiest to you, his unfortunate determination to make this remarkable and quite legible script serve also as a shorthand reduced it in his own practice to the most inscrutable of cryptograms. His true objective was the provision of a full, accurate, legible script for our noble but ill-dressed language, but he was led past that by his contempt for the popular Pitman's system of shorthand, which he called the Pitfall system. The triumph of Pitman was a triumph of business organization. There was a weekly paper to persuade you to learn Pitman. There were cheap textbooks and exercise books and transcripts of speeches for you to copy, and schools where experienced teachers coached you up to the necessary proficiency. Sweet could not organize his market in that fashion. He might as well have been the Sibyl who tore up the leaves of prophecy that nobody would attend to. The 4 and 6 penny manual, mostly in his lithographed handwriting, that was never vulgarly advertised may perhaps some day be taken up by a syndicate and pushed upon the public as the Times pushed the Encyclopaedia Britannica, but until then it will certainly not prevail against Pitman. I have bought 3 copies of it during my lifetime, and I am informed by the publishers that its cloistered existence is still a steady and healthy one. I actually learned the system too several times, and yet the shorthand in which I am writing these lines is Pitman's. And the reason is that my secretary cannot transcribe Sweet, having been perforce taught in the schools of Pitman. Therefore Sweet railed at Pitman as vainly as Thersites railed at Ajax. His raillery, however it may have eased his soul, gave no popular vogue to current shorthand. Pygmalion Higgins is not a portrait of Sweet, to whom the adventure of Eliza Doolittle would have been impossible. Still, as will be seen, there are touches of Sweet in the play. With Higgins's physique and temperament, Sweet might have set the Thames on fire. As it was, he impressed himself professionally on Europe, to an extent that made his comparative personal obscurity, and the failure of Oxford to do justice to his eminence, a puzzle to foreign specialists in his subject. I do not blame Oxford, because I think Oxford is quite right in demanding a certain social amenity from its nurslings. Heaven knows it is not exorbitant in its requirements. For although I well know how hard it is for a man of genius, with a seriously underrated subject, to maintain serene and kindly relations with the men who underrate it, and who keep all the best places for less important subjects, which they profess without originality and sometimes without much capacity for them, still, if he overwhelms them with wrath and disdain, he cannot expect them to heap honours on him. Of the later generations of phoneticians I know little. Among them towers the poet laureate, to whom perhaps Higgins may owe his Miltonic sympathies, though here again I must disclaim all portraiture. But if the play makes the public aware that there are such people as phoneticians, and that they are among the most important people in England at present, it will serve its turn. I wish to boast that Pygmalion has been an extremely successful play all over Europe and North America, as well as at home. It is so intensely and deliberately didactic, and its subject is esteemed so dry, that I delight in throwing it at the heads of the wiseacres who repeat the parrot cry that art should never be didactic. It goes to prove my contention that art should never be anything else. Finally, and for the encouragement of people troubled with accents that cut them off from all high employment, I may add that the change wrought by Professor Higgins in The Flower Girl is neither impossible nor uncommon. The modern concierge's daughter, who fulfills her ambition by playing the Queen of Spain in Roy Blah at the Théâtre Français, is only one of many thousands of men and women who have sloughed off their native dialects and acquired a new tongue. But the thing has to be done scientifically, or the last state of the aspirant may be worse than the first. An honest and natural slum dialect is more tolerable than the attempt of a phonetically untaught person to imitate the vulgar dialect of the golf club, and I am sorry to say that in spite of the efforts of our Academy of Dramatic Art, there is still too much sham golfing English on our stage, and too little of the noble English of Forbes Robertson. End of preface. Act 1.